Okay, we'll take questions. So the same drill, there's a microphone here if you want to put up your hand. Just say who you are and where you're from, and we'll pick it up as well on the podcast. Okay.
Hi, my name is Margaret Fenton. I work with Respond Housing Association. My question is just in terms of matching funding. You mentioned voluntary time is considered as part of that. I'm wondering, do you put a value on that per hour? So if you're putting it into your matching funding, do you assign it a euro value per hour?
Generally what people have done is that we've said to people to assign a value to it yourself that you think is an appropriate value rather than us, you know. So that's what we do. We're probably a little bit more flexible with some of the non-statutory providers, some of the smaller agencies around that, because the whole application process has a cost, and we know cost is value. So assign a value that you think is appropriate to it, and that's what we include in it, yeah. Thank you.
Sorry, Q. Jerry Cunningham, Praxis. It may be something I've missed, but is there an upper limit on what can be applied for?
We haven't set an upper limit. The overall size of the pot for mental health is 2 million and for disability is 3 million. So it's in that sort of a context. Someone said to me, what if I give you a plan to spend the 2 million? I sort of said, okay, I'm not able to envision someone being able to do that scale of a project within the time frame. So we haven't said it. What we're going to do is we're going to look at the applications that we get in. We're going to pick the ones what we think are the best ones that best match onto the criteria. And then we, you know, from that then we see how many we're in a position to do within the pot of money that we have. We sometimes do a bit of horse trading on budgets as well. If by discussing budgets and monies that people are looking for, is that we're able to squeeze another few quid out to do something elsewhere, we do that engagement as well. So it's okay.
Hi, Gary Donoghue from Trinity College. For people who've already been funded in past schemes, I wondered whether and to what extent your previous track record would count towards your new application.
It won't affect it positively or negatively. We have, within the grant streams, there's a set of objective criteria there. And that's what we're asking people. So we'll assess them on that basis, you know. Certainly there's no bar to it, so it doesn't impact one way or the other. Meet the criteria, and if you're the best application that we assess, but then you get another one again. If you're not, you won't. Thanks, Gary.
Peter Hughes from the Dublin West Southwest Mental Health Services. I'm just wondering, approximately how long does it take for the decision to be made on the application?
Fairly quickly. We would expect... The issue we're having at the moment on the timelines is outside of our control. But generally, in our mind, we're targeting applications opening maybe next week, closing. We have a proposed date about the 9th of May. We would hope to have them scored up and marked certainly by the end of May. And then within our own agency, we have a process where we have to go through a monitoring group, which comprises really of all the funders. There's Department of Health are on it, HSE are involved in it, Atlantic Philanthropies are on it, some of our own board members. That usually takes about a day to go through them. And then finally then, what we have is we have a board of trustees who finally sign off on them. So all things going well, we would set ourselves a target of trying to be out of that space by the end of June. So that we'd be in. Now these guys always say to me, we'll never do it by June. But I think from our end, we're fairly slick in terms of that's why we use this online application process. So we would hope end of June, beginning of July, say to people, you're in or you're out, you know, fairly quickly. Yeah. And then it's a matter of getting it going then in terms of, you know, the negotiations with the projects around. We do an assessment around your state of readiness to go, because there's a big difference between writing an application and me coming and saying doing it and having your plan that's robust. So there's that kind of a couple of months getting that piece done, then we commit whatever we've agreed to a contract, and then people start doing it then. So you would expect, you know, all things going well, that end of August, beginning of September, people should be in a position to actually go and do it, yeah.
JP Swain, First Fortnight Mental Health Arts. Just a question about it. It's back to the match funding again. I'm just wondering, you know, does match actually mean matched? Is it euro for euro, block for block, space for space, or are you actually, no. You know, I mean, if there's running costs that are on one side of the project, but there's a need for space for, you know, a building space or whatever else, I mean, do you put a value on each of those?
Yeah. Depending, if it's a big agency with lots of resources, we'll squeeze them harder than a smaller agency or a community-led or a family-led agency. But it's whatever, you know, we have people sometimes very much undervalue what it is they do. So that's where we're saying that there's our time, there's a space maybe that we're able to use, there's a resource in terms of supporting the project that's already there. So it's really important to try to think through very objectively all the different pieces that are going to support this project within the agency that's there, and that's what becomes part of the match. Yeah.
But just to be clear on that, if I do a business case for the project and I unit cost each element of it, it's the total of that unit cost that needs to be matched as opposed to the actual function of each of those sources of income, yeah?
Yeah, no, it's just a total figure. So if you're able to describe, these are, you know, our contribution to this project is...
Okay.
That's what we look at.
That's great, thanks.
Okay, JP, thank you.
Petra Daly from Crosscare. I just have a question in relation to your definitions around people with mental health, and I suppose, are you precluding people who are at risk of mental health issues, or does that, like, can that be funding be looked for groups that are at risk of mental health? And I suppose I'm particularly interested because I work with travellers, and I'm also knowing that a lot of people in the traveller community who have mental health issues don't actually get access to the services. So we'd be interested in looking at developing the individualised support, but also looking at how that can happen. So I suppose I'm just... And how long do you have to be within the mental health services before you'd be eligible to apply as well would be the other... And do you have to have stayed long-term, short-term, day-to-day, whatever, you know?
Okay. Hopefully I can give you a reason. I think we're trying to be very flexible, because what we're trying to do is to respond in a flexible way and try to come up with different ways and slick ways of doing stuff. So I think we've tried to describe the capacity building in as wide a context as is possible. So that, I think, there's a lot of flexibility within that in terms of how you can tailor things that are preventative and supportive at the same time as well. So, you know, we're not going to be looking for things like, for definitions of, yeah, you know, this person has a mental health difficulty, it's confirmed by that. You know, if people say to us, we're going to support people with mental health or with a disability, you know, we're going to accept that, really. I think we're going to be asking people, though, to do a demonstrator of sitting down with one person and designing something individually. So we won't be asking to say that guy's name is Hugh Kane, but we're looking to make sure it's HK, and it is possible to, you know, to make sure for us to verify that person actually exists. Yeah. That answer you enough?
Yeah, and do you support national projects as well, or do they have to be regionally based?
As I said, it's right across the spectrum, but I think what you have to remember is it's a 2 million pot. So in that sort of a context, that then becomes, on some level, restrained of what we can do. And we've a number of, if you look at the priorities, so there's a priority to move people to individualized settings. So we have described people who are currently in inappropriate settings, and we've also talked about people that if they don't get a support are at risk of ending in that sort of a setting. So there's a bit of flexibility around that as well. Yeah. Thank you.
I just have a quick question. My name's Rebecca Wolfson, and I'm based in Dublin North Mental Health Services in the community. Can you make applications on an individual basis as opposed for multiple groups? So if there was one particular family?
I think one of the straight answer is no.
Okay.
Right? And the reason for that is that we just, because we're trying to develop, you know, systematic kind of responses that are individualized, we could find ourselves, you know, 3,600 people who are in institutions could individually apply. So the way to look at that is to form, if there's a particular family, is to form a consortium or a group of concerned people that would include that family. And what you'd be trying to prove to us, though, is that it's individualized, that there is further learning, the learning is transferable as well, because again, we have, I can think of a project even now where you are at the moment where it's very much focused around one particular person, but it's trying out a different kind of an intervention that has multi-stakeholder involvement. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the way. So in other words, I can't write to Jenny and say, I'm looking for money for UKAM, because it has to be in a wider context.
So really you want it individualized, but it has to be for a collective, is that?
No.
It has to benefit more than one person.
What I'm saying is that Hugh Cain as an individual wouldn't be acceptable. But if a group of people came together and said, we want to apply to as a consortium to put in place a range of supports to test out on Hugh Cain to support him to do that, yeah, we would accept that application.
Okay, thank you.
Right? Yeah.
Veronica O'Keane, Tele Mental Health Services. Hi. My question relates to the capacity building stream, which, as Fiona said, is very flexible, and I know it's difficult to define, but I don't even really have much of an idea about what sort of projects you'd be interested in funding. I take it they're not individualised, so are they service related?
Well, I can give, I suppose, the Áras Fáilán project that Margot described came in under our capacity building stream in 2010. So that was a capacity building project. I suppose a number of other examples. There was one actually in the Dublin South West Mental Health Service, which was very much about staff training to provide a different type of service within the organisation. But we've also we've had family-led organisations that have provided training for families. That was for people with disabilities, but obviously it's open to anybody. Trying to think of another couple of examples. So yeah, we've had we've had staff training, we've had family training, we've had training for service users, for individuals. It's a wide range.
Thanks very much.
I probably sound stupid asking this now, but anyway.
Please do. That's what being individualised about, Jen.
Where does an individual sit then with the first presentation that was given this morning, which was about an individual client that was moving out? I'm a bit confused about that.
Okay, sorry. I think the problem could be because one of the eligibility questions is that somebody who's an individual applying isn't eligible. And I suppose what he was saying is if somebody's applying on behalf of themselves for supports, so it's a person applying, we aren't in a position to accept that. So that's where Hugh was describing about either linking up with a group of similar individuals who are looking for support and applying that way, through an organisational structure. The first presentation this morning was from an existing mental health service that was supporting one single person. Is that clear now?
What I'm saying is, Yeah. I can't. Hugh Cain can't apply for Hugh Cain, yeah. But if a group of people want to apply for supports on my behalf or support, so yeah. And please do, yeah.
Mine is just a question for clarification to Anne Barrett from Carlow Kilkenny Mental Health Services.
You're welcome.
I'm just interested when you talk about family-led applications. Can you give us a few examples of that, or?
The type of issue there is that a number of families have sometimes expressed an unhappiness with how their family members are being supported, and they come up with a suggestion as to how they might, if they were funded to set up something alternate, that they might be they might look for a grant to do something alternate to provide a service to some of their own family members. That's one example. The other example would be where a group of families or a group of individuals approached us and sort of said, I'd love to provide my own service, but I don't have the capacity or I haven't thought it out enough. And we've given grants to those kind of people for some training and development and support so that they're able to reflect on how it is they might intervene and do something ultimately, would be a second type. And then there was another project where there were a group of men who had physical disabilities who sought a grant from us to allow them to research and set up a cooperative where ultimately they would take their money back from a service provider and they would manage the provision and the purchase of their own supports themselves. So it's that kind of a range, yeah. So it can be either focused on doing something differently, or coming together to learn how to plan to do something together, or coming together to learn and to get more depth and information about a particular topic.
Does that mean that sometimes families are together in the context of maybe a carers group or, you know, work that mental health professionals are doing with them,
yeah,
as I would have been engaged in, but other times could it be one family then, or two families? Sometimes I put a family member in touch with another family member.
Absolutely,
if their
yeah.
Relative is suffering from a psychosis. Could they come together just yeah. as Mr. Jones and Mrs.?
Yeah, and sometimes the richer way of doing that is a couple of families joining up with some providers or some other community-based organizations to form that kind of a consortium to come together to try to do something differently and more connected, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Alison Lee, Calderos Wicklow Mental Health Services. I just wondered, within the definition of capacity building, would training of staff in a particular psychological intervention in order to promote patient recovery be
okay.
included in that?
Yeah, I think what we're saying is, traditionally when we talk about capacity building, we talked about staff training. What we're particularly interested in trying to develop is the capacity of all the stakeholders, so the people who use services, their carers, some community groups. So I would be sort of saying that the more, you know, and that where people learn together, very often it's when you really get a real change, because it's a bit about changing hearts and minds as much as practice. So that if someone was saying to me, listen, there's a really interesting way of intervening with someone, I would be saying, rather than just bringing staff to learn or teach staff how to do that, my challenge would be, can you bring some staff? Can you bring some of the people who are going to potentially have this as an option available to them, or some of their family members, and put together a group like that can learn about this different intervention or different way of intervening. And you can also, within that, then you can tailor it so that, you know, people at different levels in that sort of a model require a different level of support. So absolutely staff are included, but I think if you were able to include people who are going to benefit from this new intervention, I think your application will get stronger.
And can I just add to that? I suppose in terms of, you know, obviously there are, you know, specific skills that are very helpful to staff in working with people. You know, if it is a straightforward, we're going to train, you know, N staff to do this, you know, we look very closely at how that translates into improvements in services for individuals. You know, so if it's, you know, it would be really nice if our staff could, you know, had this skill, you know, that's not going to cut it. You know, we need really direct tracking as to, you know, they will be working with these people and they will be doing this type of work with these people, not, you know, it'll be business as usual in terms of our current service provision. Mm-hmm. You know, so it has a really yeah. direct link to this kind of work. Yeah.
One of the projects we funded, it was out in DCU the year before last, and that was these trialogues, and there were people here who took part in that, and that's where staff and people using the service and some family member came together in that trialogue to go and learn and train in DCU about a different way of delivering a service. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello there. My name is Paul Healy, and I work with my colleagues Margot and Laura here on the SUS Wellness Breaks project that Margot okay. mentioned earlier. And your whole strategy seems very interesting for funding for the next couple of years. And I'm just, my question has two parts, I suppose. I think one thing that could be quite useful in this country would be peer-run crisis respite houses, which would be a great alternative to hospitalization for people. And we don't really have that up and running in this country yet, and there's lots of experience out there otherwise, mm-hmm. and that would require capital funding. In your experience, would you have anybody who would have applied to you previously who would maybe get the capital funding somewhere else for something like that? Or would you be interested in the future in supporting capital funding for something like that alongside, say, program funding?
Okay, we don't support capital funding simply because it just would mop up the fund so quickly. And, you know, I suppose one of the challenges would be, or my sense is that we have certainly lots of buildings out there. And it isn't for the want of buildings that things haven't changed. So I'd be encouraging people to see, is there a building in your particular community, in your particular area, that's available and is usable? So that's where I'd be pushing people in terms of that side of it. Mm-hmm. And then we would be certainly more interested in supporting the, you know, the programme response to it, really. So, so just in terms of capital, the answer is no. But I'd be saying to people, you need to think outside the box on that and see how you might be able to deal with that in a different kind of a way. Okay. Look, I first want to thank all our contributors for their contribution here today. I think it's what we're trying to do is to give you a flavour. We certainly don't have all the answers, and we don't purport in any shape or form to have the answers. What we're trying to do, I'm absolutely convinced that when you bring a group of committed people together, that if there's some way of unlocking our creativity and our great energy to do things differently and make it better for people, I think that's what this meeting is about. So I wish people well with their application process. If people have any queries, I just dealt with this the other day, and it's important to say it again. We're not in a position to speak to people directly once the application process goes live, because we have to ensure a very level playing field, and we have to ensure that, you know, if I speak to someone during the application process, on some level, I could be accused, or you could be accused of insider trading, right? So what we're saying to people, if you have a query, send it to our info@genio.ie, and we'll answer the query. And what we'll do then is, as Fiona and some of us mentioned earlier, we are developing a set of frequently asked questions. So we'll keep adding them to the frequently asked question so that we're able to share with you the question a colleague asked. And we'll also share with you the answer we gave them. And because it's in a written format rather than a spoken word, there's a very direct correlation between the question that was asked and the answer we gave, so that everybody who's in the process has access to that question and to that answer. Yeah. So, you know, keep in touch with the website. Unfortunately, we were hoping to be able to announce the opening date today, but it's a particular block with that at the moment that we're working on. But anyone who's been here, we will do a shot to you to say it's open now. But keep in touch. Once it opens, keep in touch with the website, watch the FAQs, and good luck with the application. Thanks very much, everyone, for coming along.
Thank you.